We're going to consider one more of the sayings of Christ tonight, I thirst. I was talking to Phil this morning. I guess I didn't mention, next Sunday I'm actually going to have the opportunity to preach down there in Orlando. They have one of the larger congregations in the Orlando area has set up a, I guess one of the members owned one of the hotels right there close to Disney World. And so he had set it up where in one of their big conference rooms to have church Sunday morning services right there at the hotel. And so a lot of people that are traveling go to church there. And what they do is they have some of the members from the congregation there come over to take care of leading, singing, and things of that nature. But then they ask if there are any visiting preachers that are coming to go to Disney World that are going to be over there over a Sunday, they can preach there. And so when they preach there, they also get to have a room in the hotel for the week at no cost. So that's a nice bonus to be able to help you afford to go if you're a preacher. So we were able to take advantage of that. In fact, my dad preached there this morning, and they're staying this week. And then when we get there next Sunday, I'll preach, and then we'll stay the following week there in that hotel. So that's very, you know, folks can be, are very generous sometimes, and things that sometimes you wouldn't even think about. I would have never thought about doing something that way, but they do that. And I don't have any idea how many visitors they have that actually are there on Sunday and go to church there, but it's right there by the gate to Disney World. So it'll be interesting to get to see an opportunity to worship with people from all over the country. Who knows, maybe all over the world. No telling who will be there. There's no regular crowd there, though. That would be interesting to be a part of a situation like that. I know, you know, you go some places, some of the tourist areas, I know like up around Gatlinburg, they talk about, you know, in the off-season they had 25 members in their congregation, but sometimes in the summer they'd have 250. You know, and how do you deal with that? That'd be totally different from what most congregations are used to, so it would be something challenging to deal with. We've been looking at John on Sunday nights, and so we looked at the trials. We finished those last week. And we're going to skip ahead a little to the actual cross, because one of the sayings that Jesus said on the cross was from the book of John, from John chapter 19. And verse number 28, Jesus there, it says, "After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the Scripture might be fulfilled, said, I thirst. Now there was set a vessel full of vinegar, and they filled a sponge with vinegar and put it upon hyssop and put it to his mouth." Now hyssop is like, kind of like, we might think about like a stick of bamboo. It was a long, stiff branch type thing that they could stick the sponge on and reach up there, because he was hanging up on the cross. So they put it on that stick, basically, and hyssop was the kind of stick that it was. But this is an interesting one. This is the shortest of the statements from the cross, just two words. And of course, this follows the one that we looked at this morning, where we talked about, my God, why have you forsaken me? And we talked about it being dark during this time. And all of the rest of these now, we've still got two more that we'll deal with when we get back from our trip. That these two more will also be during those last minutes of darkness before Jesus died. In fact, when I say last moments before he died, the next two actually are just that, right before he dies. And so here he says, I thirst. And we notice the progression. This is now the fifth statement. And Jesus finally turns. Now, you think about it. He's been up all night. He's been beaten. He hasn't eaten. He hasn't slept. He hasn't had anything to drink. Nothing good has happened for the past 12 to 15 or 20 hours. And here he is. On the cross, for now, he's been there for almost three full hours of darkness, and he was there for 3 hours before that. So he's now been hanging here almost 6 hours. And finally, after being concerned about his enemies and praying for them, after being concerned about one of the criminals that was hanging on the cross with him, after being concerned about his mother and making sure she was taken care of, and after crying out to God about his spiritual situation of being alienated from his Heavenly Father for that time, now finally he turns to and pays attention to what for most of us would have been the very first thing we thought about: our physical body. He has denied the issues of the physical body, the situation that he's in physically, for all of this time. And finally he says, I'm thirsty. That's it. I thirst. I'm thirsty. That's it. Kind of makes you thirsty just talking about it, doesn't it? Let's discover some of these things that we can learn from this. First of all, we can discover that thirst is a universal problem. Every human being, every animal even for that matter, it seems, needs water to survive. They need to have something to drink to survive. And all of us have felt thirst to some degree or another. Now probably none of us have ever, you know, maybe we hadn't been in the desert like you see in the movies, you know, where the people are just so thirsty they'll drink the sand, you know. But maybe we hadn't ever been in that bad a shape. Maybe you have. But all of us, you know, if we get out there working in the summer heat and we want something to drink, it's thirsty. We're thirsty, and we felt that to some degree or another, some more than others certainly. In the Bible there are many examples of great thirst. We remember Hagar in Genesis 21 verses 15 through 19 when Abraham sent her away because Sarah was upset at her. And so he sent her away, but he gave her a water bottle. And unfortunately for her, the water bottle ran out. And there was nothing left. And she was out in the desert area. There was no water around as far as she knew. And so she had her child with her. It's interesting, some of the terminology here. Apparently this boy was about 14 years old. But it talks about she cast the child under one of the bushes. She was still, you know, she was a mother. He may have been 14, but she was still mothering him. She put him under one of the bushes there in the shade. And then she went and went off away. She said, I don't want to see my child die. So, you know, we're going to die out here. We got no water. We got no food. This is the end. I'm going to put him in. I don't want to watch. And so she went off away. And then the angel came and appeared to her and then eventually pointed her to some water. But she was in such great thirst that she thought she was going to die and thought that her child was going to die because of that. When I think about David in 2 Samuel 23, one of the most amazing stories in the Old Testament, and maybe you've not ever even heard it. David was sitting there outside of Bethlehem, his old hometown. And he said, oh, you know, I was just thinking about that well that's by the gate there in Bethlehem and how good that water was. And what, oh, how I wish somebody would give me a drink of water from that well. Well, some of his mighty men, three of them in fact, fought their way through the camp of the Philistines and went to that well and got him some water and brought it back. Can you imagine fighting your way back through an army of Philistines trying to carry the water without spilling it? These guys, they are some courageous guys, you know. And they get back to him, and then he wouldn't even drink it after he'd wished for it. You know that old saying, your wish is my command? These guys took that literally. He said, oh, I wish I could have a drink of that water out of that well. They said, let's go. And they went. And they got the water and they brought it back. And then he wouldn't even drink it. He poured it out to the Lord. Now can you imagine? Think about the time you were the thirstiest you've ever been. And imagine if somebody brought you a cup of water. Can you imagine pouring it out? That's some serious dedication right there on David's part. He said, after they had risked their lives, I wouldn't want to drink the blood of the men who went and risked their lives. Now, I don't know about you, but I think folks were a little different then than they are now. Nowadays, I imagine those folks that risked their lives to get it would be rather offended if you didn't drink it after they risked their lives to go get it. But they probably understood at that time. It was probably an honor thing with them at that time. But we see some of those. We see Israel in Exodus 17, 1 through 6. And they're out in the wilderness and they're all thirsty and they don't have anything to drink. And they're arguing with Moses and fussing at him because they don't have water to drink. And that then, of course, when God told Moses to strike the rock and the water came out. Of course, there was another occasion, similar thing. One time there was water, but it was no good. And so God showed Moses a particular tree that he threw in there and it solved the problem. Sisera, when he was fighting a battle against Israel, he was thirsty. He turned into a tent. And he went in and he said, I'm thirsty. Give me a little water to drink. And she was a sneaky, sneaky woman, this Jael. She was on the side of the Israelites, but Sisera didn't know it. He thought that she was his ally. And he said, give me a little drink of water and hide me from the Israelites. Well, she hid him under a coat. And then, instead of some water, though, she gave him some warm milk. And she covered him up. Well, he fell asleep, and while he was asleep, she took one of the stakes from the tent and drove it through his head. So, you know, you got to be careful who you ask for a drink of water. It could get you into trouble. And then Samson, of course, he was thirsty on one occasion in Judges 15, verses 18 and 19. And he was afraid he was going to die of thirst. But God made a hollow place for him where there was some water that came out. Kind of like with Moses. And the water came out of there and he drank it and he was revived again. And we know, if you've ever been thirsty, you know how it doesn't take but just a little bit, just a couple of swallows. You just, oh, it feels so much better just to have a couple of drops. Remember the rich man and the story that Jesus tells of the rich man and Lazarus, and he was so thirsty, he was tormented in that flame, and he said, Abraham, if you could just let Lazarus dip his finger in the water and just let him drop a couple of drops on my tongue. That's how thirsty he was. Just a couple of drops of water. Now, I don't know. When I've been really, a couple of drops really probably wouldn't do very much. But that's how bad off he was, that just the thought of a couple of drops gave him hope, made him think that maybe something better could come from it. But another thing that we need to consider in this section is we can discover the value of nameless heroes. Do you know that not all the heroes in the Bible have a name? Oh yeah, we know about David and Goliath, and we know about Noah and Daniel in the lion's den, and we know about all those folks that were great heroes, and we talked about Samson, and you know, we know those. But what about the ones that nobody knows? Nobody but God knows their name because it's not even recorded. Notice this in Matthew 27:48. He said, I'm thirsty. And one of the people there ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar, and Matthew said, put it on a reed, is the way Matthew describes it. But again, a long, straight stick of sorts. And gave him something to drink. Think about what happened here. We don't know that name of that person who did that. This is a person who had some compassion on a suffering Jesus hanging on the cross. He did something when others did nothing. You know, we think about Elijah, for example. There was only one Elijah, but there were 7,000 unnamed faithful, according to 1 Kings 19:18. Now, I don't know that, I mean, not exactly 7,000. It's probably a rounded off number. You know, like we would say, well, how many folks live in Corinth? And, you know, we wouldn't give an exact to the count number. We'd round it off and you know, such and such thousand. And that's what God does a lot of times with numbers in the Bible. But you think about that. 7,000 faithful people. People who are faithful to God, who had never bowed their knee to Baal. But we don't know the name of a single one of them. Were they heroes? You bet they were. When Ahab and Jezebel are running your country, and you refuse to bow down to Baal and worship him, and you stay true to God, you're a hero. These folks were heroes. There was only one Elijah, but there were 7,000 unnamed heroes. We think about a few more of those things. Let's think about a few other things. You know, who held the rope when Paul went out the window in the basket? Remember that story? They let Paul down. Somebody had to hold that rope. We think about even who penned the letter to the Hebrews. You know, a lot of people say it was Paul. A lot of people may say it was somebody else, Apollos or Barnabas or different ones that they say that it might have been. But we don't know for sure. But boy, you want to talk about a book that's encouraging to Christians all over the world for 2,000 years almost, and yet we don't know for sure who wrote it. But that's a hero right there, but unnamed. It was never named in there who actually penned that book, that letter. What about the elders of the church in Ephesus that Paul went to and he warned them about the dangers that were to come? We don't know who they were. They came to meet Paul when he was on his way to prison. What about the people who were members and the leaders of the two churches in Revelation that were faithful, that God didn't have anything negative to say toward them? What about those two congregations? You think about how, what kind of leadership did they have that those two congregations remained faithful when the other five had some good things going on, but they had some serious problems too. But those two congregations, they were serious about it. Who were the leaders there? Who were the members there? They were heroes. But we don't know the name of one of them. You know, you think about it. He writes to the angels of the seven churches, which most people would say that's, you know, that's probably the messenger. That's maybe the preacher or maybe one of the elders of the congregation that he's writing to there. But we don't know the names of a single one of those folks that he's writing to. And yet how important those people were. Who were the prophets? We talked about Elijah a minute ago. Elijah went to Obadiah, and Obadiah talked about the fact that he had hid some of the prophets in the cave. He hid them by 50s in the cave and fed them from the king's own food. You want to talk about a dangerous endeavor? You're working for Ahab and Jezebel and you're feeding God's prophets from their food, from their kitchen. So Obadiah was a courageous guy. But who? What about those 50 prophets that he had in that cave that he was feeding? And 50 others in another cave. And he had them hidden and he was feeding them. 100 of them altogether. Who were the 300 who fought with Gideon? We don't know the names of a single one of them. Not a one. But they were heroes. Heroes of the faith. And there are many, many more that we could look out throughout the Bible. Hundreds of people, thousands of people, who are never named, and yet, to God, they were heroes. And you and I can be heroes like that too. We may never be known all over the world as being famous for something or anything. But that's okay. We don't have, you know, people in California or Montana or Russia don't have to know who we are. We can be heroes. And if you think that isn't true, when we give and then the elders choose a mission work to support with that, you think those people who are converted to Christ because of the dollars that were given by the congregation here and other congregations all over, you think those folks don't think, hey, there's somebody back there that's a hero to me. Somebody helped me be saved by sending this missionary over here to me? Sure they do. Unnamed heroes. We can do something when others do nothing. It was also a fulfillment of prophecy, Psalm 69 and verse 21. They gave me also gall for my meat, and in my thirst they gave me vinegar to drink. Now, we've talked about this a little bit in the time past, that you know, we think, vinegar? I'm thirsty. I don't want vinegar. That's the last thing I want. But what we've got to remember is Jesus was in pain hanging on this cross. The vinegar probably would have been something like a wine vinegar. It probably would have had some alcoholic content even to it that would have numbed the pain, kind of like an anesthetic. Anesthesia, anyway. But you know, it would have deadened the pain, you know, like an aspirin or a Tylenol like we would give somebody today, or something like that, ibuprofen or something. But to him, that was what they had. That was all they had. They said, well, here, you know, I'll give you some of this and it'll help ease the pain. Wouldn't really quench the thirst. I mean, vinegar's not really going to quench the thirst. But it's going to at least help the pain of the situation that he was in. But we can also discover the humanity of Christ. You know, there have always been, throughout the history of Christianity, those who denied the physical being of Jesus Christ. They'd say, well, he only appeared to be a human being. He wasn't really in the flesh and blood. He was just a figment of their imagination, in a sense. He just looked that way, but he wasn't really. But this expresses the humanity of Jesus Christ. He was thirsty. He got thirsty, just like every one of us. There's no doubt about it, he was a human being. If he was not flesh and blood, then he would have had no thirst. You know, you don't read about the angels getting thirsty. You don't read about God getting thirsty. You don't read about the devil getting thirsty. Spiritual beings don't get thirsty, but physical beings do get thirsty. And Jesus was a man of flesh and blood. This was a cry of the body, not the spirit. He wasn't thirsty in a spiritual way. Now, I know he said, blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness. Yeah, but that's not what this was. He wasn't thirsty for spiritual things at that point. He was just plain thirsty, just like all of us have been. But then we can also discover the depths of the sufferings of Christ. We mentioned the rich man of Luke 16 earlier, and how tormented he was, how tormenting thirst can be. It is one of the worst torturous things that can happen to somebody, is to be thirsty, to be dehydrated. It can kill us. It's a dangerous thing to the human body. And of course, this dehydration was just one of the problems he faced. In fact, in some ways, I guess you could say, well, that's really no big deal. I mean, he's got nails driven through his hands and feet, and he's been beaten half to death already, and he's got a crown of thorns on his head. And you know, a little while, if something doesn't happen, they're going to come by and break his legs, and he's worried about being thirsty a little bit. It's amazing how, with all of that going on, how could the thirst overpower all of those things? And yet it is said that on the battlefields, whether it was World War II or the First World War or any of the other, Korea or Vietnam or even in the Civil War, back to the Revolutionary War probably, when there was a battle and the wounded were laying on the field of battle, and sometimes the survivors would go to camp, and in the night they would hear the cry of the wounded out in the battlefield, and they cried for water. They were thirsty. Now really, what it is, a lot of times when you begin to lose blood, which Jesus certainly was, when you lose a lot of blood, you lose that fluid that's in the blood. You become dehydrated, and you do become thirsty. And it of course, in this situation, it would have been an unquenchable thirst. It wouldn't have mattered if they'd have gave him a gallon of water. It wasn't going to solve the problem because he was bleeding to death in some way. He was losing that blood. But then also, we can discover Jesus teaching us about priorities. Again, we notice this is the fifth thing, not the first thing. Most of us, the first thing we'd have been hollering, "Ow, that hurts, you know, give me some painkiller, somebody do something." But Jesus waited almost 6 hours before he even mentioned his physical discomfort. Is it fair to say physical discomfort about somebody who's being crucified? That's the understatement of the year, isn't it? About his agony. And even then, he doesn't even mention the pain. All he says is, "I'm thirsty." In Psalm 63 and verse 1, David, when he was in the wilderness of Judah, said, "O God, Thou art my God. Early will I seek Thee. My soul thirsts for Thee. My flesh longs for Thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is." Interesting. David pointed out, here I am, I'm in a place that there's no water, and yet my soul is thirsty for You, Lord. Not for water, but for You. And we see that with Jesus, that the spiritual took precedence. The first four statements are all things of a more important nature than worrying about self and worrying about this physical body that he was living in. And then, of course, in Matthew 5:6, he says, "Blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness, they shall be filled." You see, Jesus teaches us to deny the flesh. And we can do that. We can say no to our fleshly desires. I can't imagine being thirsty for 6 hours before I said something about it. That's what Jesus did. You want to try something sometime, you try that. Try being thirsty for 6 hours without getting something to drink. That'd be tough. And without complaining about it. Jesus did it. What have you learned from these two words? Are you hungering and thirsting after God? Are you interested in the spiritual things above the physical? Are you willing to deny your flesh and feed the Spirit? If you need to respond to God's invitation for any reason, please do so as we stand and sing.